Hi, everyone. I'm Tony Chen, and this is Fish and Bits, a business and data podcast on the world of seafood. For today's episode, I have the pleasure of introducing our first guest onto the podcast, James Sibley. James is one of the most important people in the world of seafood education and communicating directly with consumers. As a social media influencer, or fishfluencer, as he describes himself, James's social media platforms boast over 400,000 followers, and his content has been viewed hundreds of millions of times across the entire world. For those of us who work in seafood, and particularly in Western countries, a common theme on the marketing and sales side of the business is how to convince people to eat more seafood. James sits directly in front of the next generation of potential consumers, educating and informing them of where their seafood comes from. In this conversation, I had the chance to sit down and chat with James about his content, the importance of authenticity in social media, and how his platform is making a difference in the marketing of seafood. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode, so let's dive in. Alrighty, James, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for bringing me on, Tony. I'm excited to be here.
I'm really excited to learn more about, you know, the world you come from, where you are in social media, and the work that you've been doing around seafood. To start, could you give kind of the audience an introduction into your journey into seafood? I think everybody's got a different path. Nobody really starts off in seafood anymore, it seems like. Everyone comes from a different way. But as I understand it, Boston, Northeastern, but how did you end up in the seafood world?
Yeah, of course. I mean, everybody I talked to has come in from anything from aquariums to oil rigs, and now they're in seafood. So I don't feel too out of the fray there, having not come from a seafood family or a background myself, right? So I guess to start from the top, I went to school right here in Boston, right? Northeastern University. But prior to that, in high school and everything, I was really into farming, right? I'm from a farm town outside of Boston. If you go west in Massachusetts, there's not much out there. There's farms.
Definitely not.
So that's what I did. I worked the farms in the summers. I really liked that. Just, you know, at the end of the day, you literally saw the fruits of your labor, and it was really satisfying. I mean, it was hard. That was hard work. But being out in the world, like with food production, was really satisfying. At university, I continued like what I enjoyed with the life sciences and focused on biology. Mostly genetic biology was my studies. I also threw in some business classes just to dabble, but I didn't really know where I was going with that, right? Because, you know, I small kid from a farm town, and now I'm in the city and don't really know what I'm doing, right? And I ended up working at a few different biotech companies, kind of getting the lay of the lands of where you can go with cell biology. And it was definitely interesting, but I wanted to expand a bit beyond there, right? I felt kind of cooped up there, and it didn't give me the same kind of satisfaction and rush and curiosity that I got working on the farm. And that's when COVID hit. So we all have our COVID stories, I'm sure, but mine happened my sophomore year of college. So I went from, you know, going to class every day, most days, to home. It was over, you know, 24 hours, it's done. That was a real shock. That was an adjustment for sure. It was for all of us. I opted to not continue quasi hybrid mode they brought on that semester with the YouTube videos with no discounted price, right? I was like, okay, I'm going to wait until the university's back on in full in person. In that time, I really wanted to kind of get back to my roots there. You know, I'd been doing classes and working in biotech, and I just missed who I was. You know, I didn't have that feeling of you know, I didn't feel like myself.
Sure.
So I was looking around at what I could do, and this was, gosh, when did COVID hit? It was like March, right?
Yep.
February, March.
Right about that.
Yeah. Yep. The farms, whatever it was, the farms were not open. But the seafood counter at my local Whole Foods was. So to me, I've always been fascinated by the ocean. You know, I spend all my time on the water when I can. I try fishing. I'm never any good, but I go. I'm more of a diver and a snorkeler when you really break it down. But I thought I'd give it a whirl, right? Like, here's an open position. I can work this around my online classes that'll be starting up here as COVID continues. You know, I might as well make the best of what I got. And my God, those first few weeks at the Whole Foods counter, I completely fell in love with seafood. I don't know about your journey into it, but when I got there, you know, to the counter, I didn't know anything. I didn't know my head from my ass. Nothing about seafood. And they were teaching me on the spot everything. It was a fast paced environment. It was what I had been missing on the farm. It was tactile work. It was hard. I was doing closers after classes, right? You know, I was out until 10, 11 sometimes. That wasn't fun to get up for like an 8 a.m. class, but I loved what I was doing. I loved teaching people about what I was learning on the job. People would come up to me and ask about the different oysters and salmon we had out in displays. And I didn't know. So I'd figure it out. I would learn, right? Like, I would figure out what these different kinds of oysters mean. What does it mean when that's a well fleet and that's a powder point? Like, who knows, right? Most people don't, actually. And that's what I learned is, you know, all the questions I had, and so does everybody else.
That's fascinating. I mean, did you get more questions about seafood than anything else? Were you just working kind of the seafood counter or?
Yeah, so I was on the seafood team. So I was okay. just in seafood, that's what I chose. That's what I wanted to be in. And Whole Foods was where I actually started what I do online. So to date, I've been doing aquaculture social medias and seafood social medias for about 2.5-3 years. But at the time, I had nothing, right? I'd maybe post, you know, a fun night out with my friends, just some pictures. I was not a big social media guy. I wasn't big on using it myself to, you know, pass the time or use it for information like I do nowadays, like most of us do nowadays to get our really down-to-earth news, right? And get those parasocial relationships going. I wasn't doing that at the time. But this was the lockdown, right? I didn't have a lot of social interaction. When I was at work, we're all in masks, and that was the closest I got to anybody, right? I was isolated. I felt pretty alone there, as we all did. And, you know, those kind of social stigmatisms that can come with making social media videos and stuff, those started to dissolve for me because I was spending more time on my phone. I was seeing other people do this. Not really exactly what I ended up doing, but, you know, I saw other fishmongers. I saw people working in stores, and like Milad, who worked in the Subway shop, all these people on different platforms, just kind of, you know, not really minding the, you know, the pressure that comes with doing that online, just going ahead and doing it. Not worrying about what people are going to think, not worrying about, you know, how it's going to impact your job, because of course I'm going to be professional about it. I'm not going to do anything crazy. Like, I'm always worried about that. At least I was, but that's just kind of what you're taught, right? Is you don't have to worry about that if you're smart about it, if you're diligent.
Did you run into any issues like with Whole Foods? Like at that time period, I mean, there was people, I think it was like Sherman Paints, like there was somebody that was mixing paints that ended up with challenges. Did you run into kind of corporate as far as posting this stuff?
I did, yeah. So when I was working at the fish counter, doing my videos, it started to really take off a bit. You know, I started getting millions of views. I worked my way up to like 20 or 30,000 followers on TikTok. I was having a great time. I was just educating people. You know, I was like, look, here's the half dozen kinds of salmon you might run into in the States. And here's why you tap oysters together and then what that can tell you about the health of that oyster. So, helpful stuff. You know, very basic seafood knowledge. I was starting out from the bottom, remember? But yeah, corporate did not like that I was doing all this in the big Whole Foods ad. my boss was very understanding. He thought what I was doing was really cool, but that wasn't going to slide, right? I had to stop. I didn't have a choice. So I made a decision there. I looked at what I was doing online and I felt like I was onto something, you know, because I didn't see anyone else doing it. And I was really fascinated by it. Everybody kept telling me they were fascinated by it. So I didn't want to stop. I really didn't. So, I didn't. I left my position at Whole Foods and emailed after doing some research about some different seafood, distributors and processors in Boston. I emailed one of the ones that was the best according to the internet, and that was Foley Fish. So that's how I ended up at Foley Fish. A week later, they brought me in. She liked my enthusiasm, my passion, and what I did online. She said, go for it. You know, I don't get it, the whole TikTok thing, but no quarrels here. Do your thing. And that was Laura Ramson who let me do that at Foley. And because of that, I took that little hobby channel I had and I ran with it. You know, that's under her guidance. I got 150 million views at Foley Fish, you know, more eyes on her seafood than probably most other seafood, maybe any other seafood in the US, in 2021. And you know, that really took off.
That's incredible. I mean, did you view it as kind of a business? Kind of you were trying to grow a brand, you knew this is something you could turn into a full-time career or job. I mean, it sounded like kind of the origin story was just posting stuff you were interested in. You know, you were learning about it, you shared it with the world. But was there a certain point that this started switching for you into, oh, there's people that would pay me to share content, to create some of the stuff? I think that's one of the big things with social media is over the kind of decades that social media has been around. And I mean, it's been around for what, 15 years, 16 years at this point? But a lot of it was kind of communicating with friends, communicating with people. That's changed quite quickly into more business-oriented kind of goals. But did that come into your mind or when you left Whole Foods, or is that something, you know, you just kind of grew into this?
Yeah, so it has been challenging to figure out this whole online social media influencer thing. I don't even know what to call myself, right? We were just discussing this before the podcast. It's like, am I an influencer? I don't know. I like to call myself a fishfluencer. but I really had no idea what to do. And because of that, I was very cautious. You know, I started getting all these emails like, hey, we'll give you a couple $100 if you show your water bottle in your next fish cutting video or all this kind of nonsense, right? you know, people just trying to, you know, jump on that train of, wow, he's getting a lot of views, as best they could. I'd never had that kind of attention before in my life, right? This was far beyond anything I was familiar with. I'm a science kid. I'm familiar with the lab. So it was an adjustment for sure.
It's not to interrupt. I mean, I'm curious as to what that thought process has been. Cause I would, if I add a little bit of analysis from what I would consider myself a social media kid. I was 14, 15 when Facebook came out. I'm not that much older than you, but I feel like we've seen so many different platforms. And that's where I think how influencers, social media creators, whatever you want to call it, the changes from Facebook to Instagram to now TikTok, even YouTube, different types of content, different types of advertisement, to be honest. I mean, it sounds like there were some brands that, you know, just wanted you to, you know, show a water bottle, show a name, show a logo. To me, that doesn't sound like your style. It doesn't seem to be the way that you've gone about it. And I don't know if that has more to do with you or also what you know, TikTok as a platform, because I feel like the way to create authenticity there is very different than what I'm used to be honest.
You're totally right. And when I was getting these inquiries, people were asking me to do this kind of flimsy stuff. I kind of like looked at what I was doing. At that point, I've been doing it for a couple months, and I really enjoyed the audience I had. People loved or hated it, right? That was kind of, I mean, the whole world of seafood is controversial there at points, but I was really proud of what I was doing, and I didn't want to dilute that authenticity and my passion with that. You know, I really didn't want to just throw business into it in what I thought at the time was how you did it, right? You sell products. I wasn't going to do that. To date, I still don't do that. I don't sell products. I don't sell other people's products. And, you know, that philosophy has helped me tremendously to get where I am on social media, right? Everything is based in authenticity and approachability and my passion for seafood and aquaculture. Even when I work with brands now, it's not to, you know, sell this CPG or whatever product directly like through my own channels. It's to raise awareness about some of the, you know, the novelty and innovation going on at an aquaculture company. For instance, I was up in New Brunswick recently with Scredding, and they were showing me some really cool stuff they're doing with alternative ingredients in salmon feed. So I go show people what these companies are doing that makes them stand out. And that's the kind of happy medium I've found to kind of twist this into real business, right? This is no longer just a hobby. Don't get me wrong. I still love what I do. But I'm able to work with companies to actually show my audience, look, I'm talking about all this stuff in aquaculture. Like, here are aqua feeds. Here's what we feed our fish and our shrimp. And when we talk about net pens versus land-based RAS, this is what that is. I can go to these places and record it, show people what it is. And if that is a strong, sustainable, robust facility and operation, then, you know, we put a face to that name, right? That makes a lot of sense to me. And that's been a strong kind of platform for me to just kind of repeat over and over and over, is find an operation that's doing it right. And once I have that, find the company that's doing it. See if they'll let me come out to their farms. Sometimes they don't. You know, what I do is still pretty new. A lot of people, you know, it's like, oh yeah, he's a TikToker. And then the guys on the farms are looking at me like I got three eyes.
come in with a light and a microphone. And yeah,
yep.
I'm curious on kind of how does that reflect in your audience, and who do you see as your kind of who watches your content? Because I would say, you know, for many of us that are in the industry, right? I came from computer science. I was a software engineer previously. My co-founder was the same. We found aquaculture to be fascinating. We thought it was right? The coolest thing, right? And but this is where you, if you're in the industry long enough, you do have this feeling that the public doesn't necessarily view it that way. There's a lot of things that the industry prefers to hide or has done in the past as far as just not being completely open about it. I feel like I'm curious to hear kind of who watches your stuff, because I think traditionally people would think only seafood people, only aquaculture people would be interested in seeing how a farm works behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. And traditionally you'd be right, right? There's a lot of that in our industry, kind of like patting ourselves on the back. Nothing wrong with that. It's actually very good for us all to keep our morale high, but to rope in the public at large is difficult. You know, it's, while there are people who are adamantly against aquaculture, I would say the majority just have apathy. And that's even harder to deal with. How do we get them to care in the first place? Good, bad, or ugly? And that's kind of what I've been specializing in these past like few years online, is how do we expand aquaculture beyond, you know, those of us who are working in it, like actively trying to build careers in aquaculture? How do we get the public on board? Because we don't want this to maintain its foreign feel. You don't want people to have no perception of aquaculture whatsoever, because that leads to misinformation, which leads to the closure of farms, right? And we don't have that with, let's say, poultry and beef, the same way we, or even agriculture, the same way we do with aquaculture. So that's been a struggle online, absolutely. My audience is uniquely global. So it's a little over 400,000 people across all platforms. 30% of them are overseas, so including Canada, so not US. So in terms of like all creators on TikTok, that's pretty global. It's a lot of like Europe and strangely the Philippines. A lot of people in the Philippines seem to like aquaculture, which makes some sense. But
the one that eats seafood, yeah,
exactly. But the people who watch what I do, it's not just people in the industry. There are people in the industry. It's mostly people who are just curious about seafood. They're like, why? Like they've never thought about salmon before, right? They just buy it. They eat it maybe sometimes, maybe never. I have people who watch my videos and they swear by never eating seafood, never going to touch it, but they really want to learn. Slowly we pick at them and eventually we'll get them to try it. But so many people, myself included, right, turn to social media to learn about just these niche, you know, parts to our daily lives. Seafood is a part of most people's daily life, even if they don't eat it every day, right? It's an influential industry. And I've found that curiosity really draws people in, right? And it's fascinating because it's so global the industry, but it's so fragmented at the same time that you can find these like little pockets of interest that people have no clue whatsoever about that everybody wants to learn about. You know, everybody's preaching sustainability, and I go out and show this mussel farm that's using like the rope grown mussel strategy. Now, us in the industry, we're pretty familiar with rope grown mussels. That's what you do. But you know, 2 years ago, I had no idea that that was a thing. And it's absolutely fascinating how they do that, how sustainable it is, right? What an incredible practice. And it gets better every year. So when I showed people what that was, it was the most resounding positivity I've ever seen. Just like, I had no idea that farms could be good for the ocean, right? This notion that there is no homogeneity amongst aqua farms, right? They're all different. There's dozens of species out there. It's not even all fish, right? Fish and shrimp. There's dozens of species going on. People are farming microalgae. You know, it's, I think roping them all into that and showing people that, like, look, 70% of the world is ocean, and we can utilize a lot of that to just like feed our everyday lives, I think is really important. And, you know, I love it. And I hope that like, I don't know, that kind of like passion comes across in my videos. I think that's what people tend to like a lot, is the passion.
No, absolutely. I mean, I resonate a lot with what you just mentioned on sharing kind of mussels. So we started our company by visiting oyster farms in the Chesapeake Bay. I was working in DC at the time, great office job, would sit in a bunker all day long, but ended up on the beach. And I've eaten oysters my entire life, never knew how they were grown, never knew that people have just bags of oysters hanging off docks and you grow them, you know, from little seedlings all the way up to kind of market size. I think what you're uncovering there, kind of, you're able to do that digitally, where, you know, when even 10 years ago, people weren't doing that on the internet, you had to go to these places to get that experience. And you've really changed that on its head. I think one of the things you also mentioned that's really interesting is the educational piece. You're primarily, I guess, the largest follower account for you is on TikTok. I don't know if you consider that kind of your main platform. But I would think for most parents, they're not envisioning their kids learning things on TikTok. They see a very different side of it when they see kids scrolling.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's been an uphill battle, not just with the parents, but with the industry, right? I started on TikTok because TikTok pays you, right? It's a much better platform to creators. It's built... one of the reasons TikTok is so successful, it's built for people to make videos. It's not built to watch videos. And that's been its core. That's why I love it. It's so much better to use than it is, say, Instagram or Facebook or any of the others that don't pay creators, by the way. So there's that.
I actually didn't know that at all. Like, I was analyzing it more from, I guess, trends of populations of people. Like, I thought everybody just went from Facebook, they moved on, you know, Facebook wasn't the cool thing anymore, then it became Instagram, and Instagram isn't the cool thing anymore, so it moved on to TikTok, Snapchat, you know, any other platform. But I wasn't aware that kind of the video creation piece was actually one of the main drivers that are driving people to create on TikTok.
There's a lot of...
That's really fascinating.
These big social media companies put a lot of money into trying to pull creators to, you know, produce original content for their platforms. All of us, myself included, we have a main platform that we put short form videos on, and we will put them on other platforms as well. But at that point, we're just reposting it. It's the same video, sometimes literally the exact same video, even with watermarks, right? So these companies are all fighting for that original post. For me, that's TikTok, because they allow you to do up to 10 minute videos, which no other platform does. It's really high quality, and that's where my largest audience is. That's where I started. I am expanding elsewhere. You know, I'm getting back on Instagram because they're finally permitting creators to have over 90 second videos. They had a limit for up until recently, like the last few months of 2023, which was useless to me, right? All my videos, it's hard enough as is to condense an entire aquaculture operation down into like one video. And then to have that be under 90 seconds, it's sometimes impossible. It really is.
Wow.
Because, you know, I got to, that's one of the burdens with the short form videos and what I do, and what something I always struggle with is, what information do I keep? What do I simplify? And what do I get rid of entirely? Because I need to, you know, when I go out to record a farm or an operation or something, I come back with, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours of footage, but nobody's going to sit there and watch 3 or 4 or 5 hour documentary. You know, I mean, maybe I would, but I need to cut that down. You know, I need to make some choices about, okay, if we're talking about the impact of salmon farms on like the seafloor, what here can we talk about? Because that is not a discussion that can be appropriately had in a minute and a half. But you still need to try. Like, we still need to, because you can most definitely make all of the negative arguments and the fight against salmon farming in a minute and a half. To rebuke that takes some serious skill, some serious thought as to what you're going to say, what you're going to leave out, what you're going to let slide. Can't fix everything. You got to pick and choose your battles.
That's really fascinating. I mean, I thought it was the demographic that influenced the platforms more than kind of the tools and creating side. Because I mean, from what you're saying, it makes total sense. If you can't, topics in aquaculture can't be explained in 90 seconds. It's very hard to do that. So it makes sense for you to be on a platform where you have that capability, and it's not going to be YouTube, but it's, you know, I think that's one of the things that I would love to kind of talk more on is how you structure this content. Cause I would want to, I guess the story I have is I've had a lot of people when podcasts were coming up, you know, I was listening to them. I was driving in my car. I thought they were great, but I had a lot of kind of senior advisors told me, podcasts are just kind of people spewing ideas. You know, what I want to do is actually read books, because people have time to structure thoughts. They take years to think about how they want to say things. You can't do that. You know, that's not Instagram. That's not TikTok. It's just, that's not how the process works. I would love to dive in a little bit into your process, because my understanding, even, you know, I've done a handful of podcast episodes now, but the amount of time and effort it takes to write content, to structure it, I would love to kind of dive into your process and to hear, you know, what you're thinking about when you go to a farm.
Yeah, that has been one of the hardest things for me to learn, because I've had to build this out entirely on my own, right? I do everything under the guise of Sibley Media. You know, my main platforms are TikTok, Instagram, and LinkedIn. I may be expanding that in the future with YouTube and whatnot as my capabilities and resources expand. But for now, those are the big three. And there was no playbook. There's no classes on how to do this. You know, I'm taught that mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. I'm not taught how to manage an entire campaign. Nope, that's not, especially when it's like in a different country with a bunch of people who are really subject matter experts, right? These guys on the farms they know their stuff, but they don't know why I'm there. I was sent by corporate, right? So they're just there to show me what I asked to see. And that was really hard to figure out at first, because suddenly I had all this freedom and kind of control over these situations. You know, I got on a plane that I didn't pay for. That was new to me. You know, all this stuff just came crashing in at once, and I showed up somewhere and I was supposed to record stuff and make these videos for somebody. I'd never done a video for anybody. So I'm out in Newfoundland just trying my best, putting on this like false display of confidence. And what I've learned from that is that the best way for me to go about recording videos is to approach it the same way I do everything that I'm familiar with the scientific method, right? That's what I grew up learning. That's what I spent all my time in school constricted by, I guess you could say. And that's what I'm comfortable with. So I start by gathering my data, right? I go out, I record everything. I don't have any, I try to not have any biases coming in, right? So I don't want to come in with a script. I don't want to come in with a, you know, perfectly identified campaign that has, you know, we're going to post these four videos on these four dates about these four topics. I don't want to do that, because when you do that, then I go somewhere to record something looking for something. I don't want to do that. I want to be there to learn. So for instance, with Shrimpbox, the guys who do the shrimp farms in shipping containers, fascinating company, by the way. They're in Indiana, I believe. And I believe, I should know, I was there. Yep, they're in Indiana. So long day. For instance, with them, I flew out to Indiana and out to their farm with no campaign whatsoever. We had no goal, no milestones, no strategy. but what we had was an idea. And the idea was to bring Shrimpbox alive to people. I'd shown them Shrimpbox at SENA that previous year, the Boston Expo. It was just a Clearwater tank. It wasn't the real farm. So the number one question was, I want to see this thing in action. I want to see 10,000 shrimp in there, not 10. So that's what we were doing. And the freedom they gave me to just do what I pleased, and the confidence I brought in, having this not been my first campaign, you know, I'd done a few by this point, was the perfect storm to create some of my best content ever. You know, some of that, my second bout at Shrimpbox, where I went out to Indiana, I got incredible footage. I was able to talk about the things that I thought were most interesting. You know, they're reusing this water, not through an RAS system, but through BioFlock, and they're pulling some of that waste material to digest in these bioreactors that can then power more shrimp farms. You know, it's shrimp power, all this crazy stuff that I think is just so fascinating. And that kind of like let me calm down a bit, because these are nerve wracking, right? You're there in front of what's typically, you know, a lot of the higher ups of these companies, and they're just looking at you, you know, waiting for you to do something. And the end of the day, it's just me walking around with my phone. It's a bit anticlimactic when you look at it, right? The magic is in the editing, and that's, we can touch on that too. But what's really important to me,
I would love to kind of hear more on the editing, but before we jump into that side, I'm curious, do you get a lot of pushback? I mean, it sounds like you're going in, there's some risk involved for you. You know, you're not promising certain posts. It's not as simple as this is a company that produces shrimp. Like you're trying to find content and you don't know what you're going to find. So as a company that's paying you to get this out, they're almost taking a risk to a certain extent. I mean, I don't know how you think about it. Is there a chance that you go in there and you don't find anything? You know, the content isn't quite to the level that you expected or everyone kind of anticipated coming in. Is that a challenge before you get into the editing side?
Absolutely. That's the most important side, is do I believe in what they're doing? You know, I can read about whatever I'd like online about a company, and I always do. I read up, you know, big, small, somewhere else in the world I can barely even understand. I don't know, whatever it is, I read up. But that doesn't tell you everything about a company, about what they're actually doing. Do they have the right mindset? Are they a mission-driven company? Are they actually looking towards a sustainable future? Are they doing aquaculture for the right reasons? That's important to me more than anything. I'm not willing to work with a company who's, you know, malicious, who is not adhering to sustainable guidelines, who's not working to improve the industry in our oceans. Like I need that to be the case. And that's not really something you can learn ahead of time. So it's, yeah, there's absolutely some risk involved there of, you know what? No, I'm not going to continue with you. That's something I'm absolutely prepared to do if the situation presents itself. Thus far, I've never had that kind of scenario play out. You know, I do my due diligence beforehand before I start talking with companies, and it's pretty easy to gleam online whether or not somebody is telling you the truth about what they're doing and what they're up to. And all the companies that reach out to me, they're reaching out to me for the right reasons, right? At least if they're coming from the aquaculture space, they see what I do online. They see what I've done with other companies, you know, bringing what they do into the limelight, and they want the same thing done for them. Now, an aquaculture company is not going to want to be in the public eye if they're doing things poorly, they're probably not going to reach out to a guy who's going to come and get a bunch of footage, right? That's not at the top of their agenda. So I've never had that issue. But it's absolutely a risk that's involved, not just with me, but with all influencers. You know, you take a risk on this person. You know, you're going about marketing in a creative way. You're not being blunt about it by just throwing money. If you want to throw money at something and pay for, you know, to run ads on Facebook, be my guest. But if you want to bring an influencer on board, you're working with a person. So that's been interesting to figure out. But I've really enjoyed the companies I've worked with so far. I've got some stuff lined up for 2024. It's going to be incredible. You just you wait.
I can't wait to see it. I mean, I think you're touching on a really unique point of authenticity. I think that matters, because if you're not being authentic with the content you're creating and how you're capturing it all, it's really hard for your audience to believe what you're saying. And I would almost say kind of TikTok obviously skews much younger as far as kind of the major, the demographics that are on that platform. But the way I've seen it, kind of as people have gotten younger and younger, their ability to chase that authenticity is much better than what it used to be. It used to be, you know, you would look up to a couple of news anchors, a couple celebrities, the amount of people, I mean, that's how the term, I guess, influencer came to be. The amount of people that had influence was much more limited than what you see today. You know, athletes have opened up doors. You see what their lives look like, musicians, kind of so on and so forth. And I think that's where I would say, like, I mean, a lot of even news, right? A lot of the people I follow, I would consider myself a YouTube historian. I grew up through YouTube multiple hours every day, for better or worse, I guess. But for the last 15 years, I probably spent multiple hours following people, and you gain trust kind of over time. You don't have to have kind of, you know, the position as a news anchor to have that voice with the public. And I feel like that's part of why that authenticity is so important nowadays.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, I turn to those, to people I trust, right? It's no longer like turn on CNN. It's, you go to a person who, you know, like the independent journalists on YouTube are incredible. You know, I wish I could, some of them have really cool jobs, right? That's, and they're really driven, passionate, intelligent people. And I hope that I can, you know, join that crowd someday over on YouTube. But the moment it's restricted to short form.
Can we change topics a little bit and talk sure. about kind of the editing process? Like, it's one of the things I'm fascinated by is, I mean, I would say you are at the front line for the industry as far as communicating with the public. You probably see more backlash and bad comments and everything kind of coming in. You are kind of that wall for the rest of us that are, you know, more behind the scenes, essentially. You're directly communicating with consumers, answering questions. I mean, to me, that means you have to spend a lot of time thinking about what you're putting out there. And, you know, it may look like a short video. You know, I think people may envision, you know, you spend 30 minutes cutting, slicing and dicing and that's it. But I would love to kind of dive into what that process is, because you've said, I mean, you record hours of footage every time you go to a farm. How do you get that into something consumable for the public?
Yeah, and this has been a new strategy for me, because when I was working at the fish counters and in the fish distributors, my content was so authentic that it was literally a 2-minute video and I'd go voice it over on lunch break, right? You could hear the trucks backing up in the background. So there was, you know, talk about getting down and dirty. That was it. That was at the plant, right? I was talking about what was right in front of me in the moment. Things have changed a bit. I've kind of professionalized it a bit beyond there. It's hard to watch those videos. You go back and like, oh my God, barely even hear myself over the trucks. But in an effort to expand what I do, both expand my audience and kind of hone it towards aquaculture and away from just seafood at large, I really had to double down on editing. So over the years, I've gotten better and better at, you know, taking hours and hours of footage and pulling the best clips I can from that to keep it visually engaging and relevant to what I'm talking about. You know, if I'm talking about the corn gluten that goes into salmon feed, there better be corn gluten that I'm holding and then salmon feed, right? So it's a lot of work to get all the footage out front, but it's even more work to edit it. Nowadays, when I start my editing processes for videos, it really begins with the scripts. So I have all this footage that I've compiled, right? I've gathered my data, and now it's time to kind of comb through it, right? See what I can use. That is a very lengthy process because, unfortunately, 95 to 99% of all of the time I spent recording is completely useless. The lighting was off. It was a little bit blurry. There's something wrong about it. This is just the nature of media and film. That's what it is. And that's why I record for hours. You know, I spend days, if not weeks, doing this, these recordings, because you need to. And you only need that one shot. You only need, because in the end of the day, it's that 30-second clip that's really engaging the people, that can keep them hooked through some of the more nitty-gritty of the discussion, which is where the script plays in. So once I have all of my footage laid out and I know where I can go with what I'm talking about, because, okay, that machine, I didn't get any good footage of that, so we can't really talk about it. But all these other ones, absolutely. So let's hone the scripts and this whole campaign towards a discussion on those, right? On this part of your operation, because that's what I can show the best. So that's how I like to operate with the editing. Once I have that, I do the voiceovers, which, you know, I'll literally just do like this on the podcast, right? That's pretty easy. And then it's, you really got to sit down at the laptop and work at it, because every video needs to be, you know, it might look short and sweet and it might feel very approachable, but I promise you everything has been combed through a million times. Not to say that mistakes don't happen. They do. They slip by, especially when you read the same script 1,000 times. It loses, all the words lose their meaning. So stuff happens. But for the most part, everything is very methodical. And, you know, it's been interesting to make this transition, right? One video now takes me like at least 6 hours, at least. And that's been quite the transition from back in the day when I could just get 3 videos out, you know, right before dinner after I got home from work. You know, I don't post as much as I used to, but what I do post is really, really good compared to what I used to be posting, which was a little bit more approachable perhaps, but it was not nearly as informative. It wasn't nearly as helpful. And, you know, people really like my new style of very well edited. It can be used across platforms, right? It's not just for TikTok anymore. Like this stuff ends up on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn even. You know, I'm seeing it over there sometimes. I don't even post it, but post some of it. But sometimes I'm like, wait, that's me. So that's been a fun expansion, is learning how to do those editing regimes properly. It is very difficult, right? It's still, at the moment, I still do everything myself, and I don't know how long I can keep that up for, especially with some of the campaigns I'm looking at undertaking, especially with my work schedule. I can't do that alone. So I may be expanding what I do, if need be, in the coming year.
Yeah, let's talk about that work schedule. What I think it was reported in recent Seafood News that you would end up at Movie. But I'm curious as to kind of what is the job entail, and you haven't touched much on kind of how you went from seafood to specifically aquaculture. I don't know if this was part of that transition as well, but would love to hear kind of what you do as a day job, if what you do on social media is considered a hobby or side gig at this point.
Yeah, so
I know it's much more than that, but
apparently now it is. It's hard to, you know, people ask me, I'm like, I don't know. So Moe was the first large, true campaign I had. They saw me before anybody else as an effective marketing route for their Canadian farms. And I was psyched about that. I was so naive that I probably wasn't psyched enough. You know, Moe's the first one reaching out to me. That's crazy. But we made it work. We made the campaign work. And I got to see aquaculture in a light that few people do. Some of Moe's facilities are unbelievable. I mean, it's not surprising, but it's just incredible, you know, and that really sold me. Up until that point on social media, I'd really been doing seafood across the board. I was still using footage from my time in the seafood distribution, where it was all sorts of things from, you know, wild scallops to wild tuna, wild swordfish, everything I can get my hands on in the seafood world. But I really doubled down on aquaculture, one, because of that experience I had with Mowi. It was just incredible to see the passion and the technology going into these sustainable farms. And two, when I was working in the seafood world, you know, it's, you get to see a lot of the stuff coming in. You get to see what the day boats are bringing in. And I just wasn't comfortable with, you know, watching these big trawlers come in off the bay and, you know, having scraped the floor. I know that New England has some of the most sustainable wild fisheries, but I personally prefer to eat farmed. I really do. That's just my stance on it. So I really doubled down on aquaculture there. After my first visit with Mowi up in Newfoundland, you know, that's what sold it. I was already leaning that way. And after that, I was like, okay, we're going to focus on this, right? Because the world is not our oyster, but we can grow oysters in our world. So
I love that. Yeah. And then, I mean, keep going.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt.
After that visit with Mowi, I actually started talking with them about, you know, if there's anything I could do at that company, because, you know, I was nearing my end of my senior year at college, and I hadn't really looked at where I would be beyond there yet. And Mowi looked like, from what I'd seen, right? Because they, you know, I went out and stayed with them. I was like, these guys are incredible. Like, I want to work with these guys. I want to understand what they're doing better. You know, I was only out there for a couple of days. I need to get into the thick of it. So that's what I pushed for. And they were very receptive. They helped me through my inability to understand like what the different facets of aquaculture were, because I came in, right? I was studying cell biology. I had no history in seafood formally. Besides working in it as like a fishmonger a little bit on the side and doing my TikToks. So I worked with them to find a role for me here in Boston that would let me continue to keep learning in the seafood world and learn with Mowi and understand what it is, you know, their goals are in the States, what the U.S. is lacking, because we are, right? When it comes to aquaculture, the U.S. is, it's abysmal. I'm embarrassed. And there's a lot to be done there. That's what's important to take away from where the U.S. is with raising our own fish and shellfish. It's all uphill from here. So I'm learning with Mowi how they work. I'm trying to understand this industry a little better. And, you know, I'm psyched to be doing it with this company that I think is one of the best in the business, right? I mean, I've seen it from myself more than once now. You know, I've been to the East and West Coast of Canada to see what they're doing. And every time I'm just like, I can't wait to come back and see, you know, the brood stock in all their glory, massive glory, or the vaccinators actually in full swing, right? Those massive machines going and all this stuff with them that I'm really excited to keep learning and keep building with. My actual role is as a in raw materials and trades. So I am a salmon salesman here in the Northeast, selling all of our salmon all over the U.S. and Canada as best I can. But I continue what I do online as a fish fluencer independently. So those two are separate entities, Mowi, my job there, and my role as Sibley Media, totally distinct. And I continue in Sibley Media to work with companies across the aquaculture sector to bring what they're doing alive to my audience and for them to use as they see fit.
Would you view so many great points there. I couldn't agree with you more about the state of U.S. aquaculture. Our company, we moved to Bergen. My co-founder's been based there ever since. He's in Oslo now, simply for the same reasons I think you saw. When you see these salmon farms, when you see these operations, they're just magnificent in it. They're awe-inspiring. It's very different than many of kind of the U.S. traditional aquaculture operations. We saw kind of the exact same things. I would be curious now, kind of whenever you're creating content, who do you view as the audience? Do you take that into account, into perspective? Do you view it as, I'm going to have a lot of consumers who are going to see this? Is that a hat you put on, or do you take it almost 100% from the science side of, I'm just here to learn and share what I'm seeing?
Yeah. So when I'm making content, I do have to keep my audience in mind, and it's a fine line between misinformation, because it's so simplified, and losing them in the jargon of the industry, right? So you gotta be very careful not to go too far on either side of that, right? If I simplify things too much, I'm just flat out lying. And if I'm, you know, literally reading a scientific paper, no one cares. So I really have to balance it for my audience, because a lot of people who are interested in aquaculture are not working in this industry. They're consumers. So I'm really trying to, you know, take people who might have seen misinformation about seafood, or are a bit skeptical about seafood, or are just young people in general who, you know, we have to learn food for ourselves. It's unfortunately the world we live in. It's all disconnected. So I just want to connect people back to their food. So that does take a bit of simplification with my audience. So, you know, oftentimes when I'm at the farms, you're giving me very in-depth tours, and it's, I find it incredible. You know, I know way, way more than I knew about aquaculture many years ago, but even still, like, there's so much further to go. But I need to always be careful and take a step back and be like, okay, what didn't I know 2 years ago? And that's my starting point with all my videos, is we're starting from a place where this might be somebody's first time thinking about the fact that you could farm in the ocean. Because for a lot of people, it is the first time, or one of the first times, that they've really seen that concept, right? Their brain has to interpret, wait, aquaculture, not agriculture, aquaculture. Okay. So we're in the water. Okay. So that's where a lot of companies, I feel like, lose it. They like, we got to start smaller. And you can do all of this in one video. I do it all the time. Is, you know, we start with, like, this is a mussel farm, right? And you show this big swath of mussels on ropes coming out of the water. And those first 2 or 3 seconds there, it's the most important part of the video. That's the hook, right? You really have to understand how to get the right people engaged. That's what I've been honing for a couple of years now, is like, how do we do that? How do we get them to watch the rest of this video, to learn something, to walk away feeling confident? And okay, my salmon isn't injected with dye. I'm okay to go buy salmon that says color added, right? You're going to be fine. I promise you. you know, we want them to walk away with that feeling, that confidence in the industry that they didn't have going in, which is hard, because, you know, when they don't have anything coming in, then where do you start? So it's the, that's the battle. That's the never-ending challenge.
Yeah, and I mean, this is where I'm curious as to your thinking on how this changes consumer behavior. I think it's a different approach. You know, I think the industry loves to point to the Got Milk campaigns of the 90s, when they had athletes and movie stars, you know, with a milk mustache. And I mean, I had friends that had posters on their rooms, you know, all these different folks. Seafood constantly references, we need kind of that Got Milk moment. I'm not so sure I believe that's going to happen. I feel like the future of the consumer is more in line with the content you're doing than necessarily kind of the big money spending, just getting brands out there approach. But I don't know how you're thinking kind of long term. How do you connect up the dots between what you're doing and people eating more seafood? I feel like that is somewhat the goal, or at the very least kind of encouraging the world to understand how their food is made. But I don't know if you're solely thinking about getting more people to eat seafood, but that's what a lot of these companies
100%. We all should be eating more seafood. I should be eating more seafood. I don't eat enough seafood.
I agree.
You know, it's how my content goes towards that goal of having the world move towards more sustainable protein, healthier proteins, I think that it all starts with what I'm doing. There's a lot of people who do food and cooking content, but that is the latter half of our food chain, right? We need to see where it comes from, the farms, and kind of working our way up the food chain until we get to the salmon or the shrimp, whatever it might be. Seeing those farms, watching these, you know, other ingredients come into the pellets so that you're not afraid of this process, these granular pellets, right? It's not bad for the salmon, you know, they're not, you know, the point we're at is a place where the misinformation is so rampant in seafood, and we've gone so long with such a great disconnect between the consumer and the producers that the problems in seafood are not what the public perceives them to be. The perceived problems are causing more problems, right? Because of all this fighting in British Columbia with the wild and the farms getting in the way of the wild migrations, they're closing down the Discovery Island salmon. That's not a great approach towards reducing our reliance on wild stocks, shutting down districts of salmon farms. What is working with those salmon farms to identify what they know are the problems. I've talked with these farmers and they're frustrated by the government's unwillingness to listen to them, right? People see them as like the enemy. And that's not just the government, it's everybody. A lot of people see what we do as wrong. And that's where I come in, right? I want to prelude the cooking videos. You know, you move on to cooking videos once you already want to eat it, you're willing to eat it. But right now, most people don't know what most of the stuff coming out of the ocean is. They don't know where it came from. They don't know why it's even there. You know, like, why are you farming cod? Why do we need to do that, right? Like all this, you got these like, you ever seen like flatfish farms? Those are really cool. You got like the layers, like little apartment buildings. like people ask me, the first question is, why? Like, what's wrong with the wild stuff? I'm like, okay, so we have to start further back here and just get everybody on the same page, because we're all on the same page about produce. We're all on the same page about livestock, but we're not on the same page when that livestock is underwater. So that's why I think it's so important that, you know, what I'm doing is bringing people on board to seafood and to aquaculture and to give them the confidence to move on to the cooking videos, right? Because that's what we do. We go down a rabbit hole of people will watch like 200 of my videos at once and be like, this is fascinating. And then by the end of it, they'll let me know, like, I just went out and bought a ton of scallops and swordfish. And I even made like, some guy messaged me. He's like, I made sashimi. I'm like, that's incredible. I don't have the guts to do that. You know, it's, I really like when I hear people, gaining like, you know, something from my videos and coming back to me and being like, hey, James, like, I just want to let you know, like, I really appreciate what you're doing. And you really like, you helped me kind of like broaden the seafood horizons of myself.
Do you talk with the companies you work with about target audiences? Cause I'm just getting different thoughts here of, you know, what you're saying makes so much sense. It's getting them before they get to the cooking shows, before they see how to make it, they want to eat it. I think you're, whether by choice or not, kind of your demographic is at that age group where I actually think you can make a lot of dietary changes. You know, I understand my grandparents, my parents, they may know the health benefits of seafood. They may love seafood, but their dietary patterns just aren't going to change that much. I don't know if that's something, a conversation you have with these companies, because this is, I feel like, yes, the demographic and on TikTok doesn't necessarily pay the bills, but they will very soon. And that's where, you know, focusing on different platforms, focusing on demographics. I don't know if that's a conversation you have with clients, customers, kind of things you think about quite a bit.
It is. It is absolutely a conversation I have. And my audience is actually older than the average audience on TikTok. It's around 19 is the average. So that's actually pretty good. You know, it's the 18 to 24s are the majority of my audience. So, you know, that the bell curve is there. And that's really important, I think, because that's me. I'm 24, you know. In a few years, I will be buying seafood most nights, you know, for me, for other people as well. You know, this is very shortly, we're going to take over this purchasing power, or at least enter that purchasing market. And it's going to have a serious impact because, you know, where I go to for my news is not, or my information about these companies and what they're doing. It's not, you know, their quarterly reports. It's not the advertisements on, I don't even know. I have a TV. I don't know the last time I turned it on. You know, it's on TikTok. It's on Instagram. These are the places where I run across people in industry. I don't know if, like, Luke McFadd, for instance, is this,
he's great.
He farms crabs, or sorry, doesn't farm. He's a crabber down in Maryland. And it's the coolest thing in the world. I've learned so much from him about crabbing that I never would have known. And now I eat more crabs than I didn't eat crabs before. I really didn't, you know, like whole soft shell crabs all the time now. You know, he showed me how to do it. And that's the kind of relationship that I hope to build with like aquaculture, is like what a lot of these fishermen in the East Coast are doing with their fisheries. We also got this guy who does lobsters as well. He's really popular, and goldfish too. Just putting a face to a niche industry and showing people that it is okay. You don't have to be afraid of this, like everything has been teaching you to be in the past. And let's reconnect with our food, right? Kind of bring it back to that way that makes us feel more comfortable. It's no longer this foreign world of stuff that happens in Norway. Well, it is stuff that, you know, your fish comes from Norway. But we can make it feel at home.
Oh, that's phenomenal. And I mean, with that, I think we can wrap up here, but I think for one, thank you for being on the podcast. I think that's a great way to end it. I'm honored to have you as a guest. I learned so much about kind of the world of marketing, the world of seafood, everything that you're doing and how it's going to impact the industry moving forward. I hope a lot of the listeners are able to also see that message and carry it forward.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Tony. I'm really, you know, I always love to talk aquaculture. Anybody who's willing, right? That's why I do what I do online. It's because people will listen to me. My friends and family got sick of me, so I turned to social media. if anybody would like to get in touch with me, my email, james@sibleys, SIBLEYS.net is a great way to reach me, or any of my social media channels. So TikTok, that's james_Sibley. On Instagram at the moment, it is JamesSibley99. That will be changing shortly. And on LinkedIn, it's just James Sibley. You can find me at Sibley Media as well on LinkedIn. All of those are valid ways to reach out to me.
Awesome. Great. Thank you for being on, James.
Have a good night.